We start off this edition of the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN with Dan McLaughlin. And, of course, you can hear him on FS Midwest doing a little post-game coverage of the Cardinals and the Atlanta Braves in the NLDS. You can see Scoops with DannyMac.com. Follow him on Twitter at DannyMacTV. With Chris Ronji, I'm Randy Carricker. It is coming up on 2:05. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Danny, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. What a game one.
That was phenomenal, and the Cardinals wound up 3-for-13 with runners in scoring position. All three of those hits with runners in scoring position came in the eighth or ninth inning.
Yeah, pretty amazing, and I thought once the injury happened to the Atlanta bullpen, it changed the dynamic of the game. A couple things did. That, I thought Acuna not running changed it as well. And the fact that Paul Goldschmidt hits a bomb and makes two very good defensive plays in the ninth to kind of save the team. Ozuna finally came through. Fowler going first to third. You know, all those things that add up that you have to have happen going in the right direction in postseason baseball. There's just so little margin for error. And give Miles Michaelis credit. You know, he was shaky in the beginning. He had, 32 walks and 32 starts this year, and he had two in the first inning. Wong commits an error. And, you know, the place is going berserk, and they kind of weathered that storm. And now the pressure's squarely on the Atlanta Braves against a very tough pitcher tonight in Jack Flaherty.
Now, before the game starts yesterday, if you were to be asked, what do you want out of Miles Michaelis to be happy? I'd say five innings and one run pretty much does it, doesn't it?
Yeah, five or six innings, and then hand it off to what has been a pretty good bullpen, especially the back end. Now, Martinez had his issues last night, and Miller hit a guy, and I think you've got to be a little concerned going into game two about that. But, yeah, absolutely. If you would have gotten that, I think from the get-go, you would have taken it.
Dan, today it's Jack Flaherty, and he's really given us no reason in the second half of the season to believe he'll be anything but great.
I would agree. And, you know, the one thing I always go back to is it's baseball. It's always something that can pop up that is weird and odd and strange in the game. And that he's young, making his first ever postseason start. There's going to be some jitters and nerves, I would imagine. And, you know, if he can get through, I always think the first inning is a key. I mean, you get through the first inning and you establish your own rhythm. And on the road, maybe you take the crowd out of it because they will be going wild. Kind of like what Tampa did the other night with Oakland. They had 54,000 people there, and then, boom, they strike first, and it takes the wind out of the sails of the crowd and the team. And an emotional night becomes kind of a quiet night. And that's what happened yesterday, and I think the first inning for Jack will be a real key tonight.
Carlos Martinez throws 29 pitches, had a little bit of had some issues last night, but had a pretty good lead, so it didn't matter in the end. He went up to Mike Schilt today and said that he's good to go and ready to go. Do you have any concern about Carlos Martinez closing out games at this point?
I haven't from the time that he was put in that role. I think he's the kind of guy that when the stakes raise and it becomes a tougher save situation, the better he gets. And I'm not necessarily saying I like the blueprint of saying let's give up a couple of bombs to make it a one-run game, but he gets better. I thought his stuff was better at the tail end of the game, and I don't know why that is and why he can't dial it up a notch or two to get to that level of intensity or what he feels he needs to do. But I will say this, it allows him to bounce back. I mean, he's been awfully durable this year coming out of the bullpen. And his numbers in back-to-backs, it's something like 16 or 17, 18 times he's done that. It's a 2.7 ERA. It's 16 innings, and it's 16 strikeouts. And he's been really good in that spot. So, heck yeah, if you got the game on the line and it's a chance to close it out, I'm going to win or I'm going down with Carlos Martinez.
Hey, Dan, I want to go back to Fowler for a second, and you brought him up earlier in our interview. But when you look at him deking Nick Markakis last night to be able to take third, when you look at the great play he made, sure, Acuna didn't run, but a magnificent play by Fowler in right field to get the ball and get it back in. Those are veteran postseason plays that he's making.
I don't think he gets enough credit for the year that he's had. Now, I'm not saying it's been spectacular and MVP and he's an all-star, but this time last year, guys, we were trying to figure out whether there was a spot on the roster for him going into 2019, and now he could be at least in the conversation for comeback player of the year. And the one thing that he does, and Corey Hart used to do it with the Brewers, and I've said it time and again, and fans don't want to hear it, but it's a fact, is that he's got long strides, and the numbers bear it out. He covers more ground than you think he does. And that means when he's running the bases, and that also means in the outfield. Now, there are times when I think it doesn't look good. There are other times, though, I think he doesn't get enough credit. And to your point, Randy, I think you're exactly right. It was a veteran that read it perfectly and came through on taking first to third, which they've been telling him to try it. He said, I'm not sure when it's going to happen, but I'm going to try it this year. Well, it happened in game one and was a key play. And Acuna, you know that he's not running. I mean, that they know that. I mean, the one thing about Acuna that if I'm a Braves fan that I'm upset with, and there's many things I'd be upset with that game last night, but doing some numbers here, guys, and now the ballpark isn't big and he's really fast and all those things, yada, 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 but Ronald Acuna Jr. this year has 20 singles of 300 feet plus.
Wow.
Most in baseball. He has 8 singles of 330 feet plus. Most in baseball. Now, you can't tell me all that is about being in a smaller ballpark and he's hitting rockets. Maybe some of it, but not all of it.
And I find it interesting that when you look at that, the replay of that play where he didn't hustle, you see the reaction on their bench. It's almost, and heck, you got your 2-3-4 hitters up. You got Ozzie Albies, who led the league in hits. You've got Freeman, and you've got Donaldson coming up with nobody out if he makes it to second. And that deflated the Atlanta bench.
Absolutely. I think it was a frustration. I think they've seen it before, and they're thinking, really, in game one of the playoffs, this is what we're going to get? Now, he's a uber-talented player. He's a great player. And would I love to have him on the Cardinal team or my team? Yes, in a heartbeat, because the guy is ridiculously talented. But that is preparation from the Cardinal side, knowing that maybe he is not busting it out of the box. And, hey, hold him to a single. Well, what happened there? He should have been at third. Changes the dynamic of how Donaldson approaches that at bat. He lines into a double play, inning over, demoralizing, injury from the bullpen, demoralizing, and the back end of a bullpen that's been remade, it's been a sore spot for them all year, couldn't get the job done. So that's why I think there's a lot of pressure going into game number two today for them.
And Brian Snitker last night basically said that he would have taken him out of the game, but he felt like he was shorthanded, so he did not do that. When's the last time you can remember in a division series or a playoff a guy getting removed for lack of hustle?
I don't, and I was trying to think of one, and probably, Randy, you know. I mean, you're a walking encyclopedia, but
I can't think of any.
Remember that. And I, watching the press conference with Snitker, he chose his words very, very carefully. He was very methodical. He knew he was going to be asked about it, clearly. He was methodical in how he answered it, and you could just tell that he was not happy one bit. Looked like he was biting his lip on what he truly wanted to say. But to his credit, you've got a young player, and if you're going to win, you need him. And he's going to get buried in the media, which happened. And even some of his own teammates buried him and were frustrated with him. I don't know if buried is the right word, but frustrated. And I think he chose his words carefully. And I think he did the right thing, because behind closed doors, don't think for a second he's not going to get an earful.
Great stuff today at ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. You've got Ben Fredrickson with Ben Fred Friday. And are you going to be on after the game on FS Midwest tonight?
We have the post-game show on Fox Sports Midwest. I'll be there.
All right, sir. We'll be tuned in. Always good to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
We'll talk to you next Friday. Thanks.
All right, Daniel. That is the voice of the Cardinals on Fox Sports Midwest, the one and only Dan McLaughlin with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Next up, the St. Louis Blues signed Braden Schenn to an 8-year contract extension today.
Woo!
And it has major implications for the rest of the roster. That's next on 101 ESPN. That's the voice of Blues forward Braden Schenn, who this morning agreed to an 8-year contract extension worth $52 million. And Ronge, the Blues keep one of their top 6 forwards in place for at least 8 years. And when you look at the core of this team now, aside from Alex Pietrangelo, they are the Blues as an organization are really tying things down for a 5-6 year run.
There's a lot of good work that's being done here in the last year or so by Doug Armstrong. First of all, let's discuss the fact he had a Stanley Cup winning team, and he went and did what he could to improve it during the offseason. And I think we all agree that Justin Falk is he's an upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
He's an upgrade over Joel Edmondson. As much as we appreciate what Edmondson did here, we have somebody who's better. So he did that. And with that happening and with the extension that he got, this was a conversation we were having just a couple of days ago. What were they going to do with Braden Schenn when it was time for him to be up for contract? And what would that mean for Alex Pietrangelo? Because you can't really keep both of them around, or at least it seemed that way, knowing what he was probably going to make. And by he, I mean Schenn. This is a pretty reasonable deal. And if you look at the breakdown, and I forgot who tweeted it out today, it might have been Pierre LeBrun that tweeted it out. It's pretty front-loaded. So by the time you get to the back end of that contract in years like 6-7, you're talking about $4.5 million,
right,
dollars
the cash
or so.
Outlay is not as significant.
Right.
Cap hit is still the same, but
yes,
the cash outlay isn't huge.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty well constructed. And I don't think this prevents them from bringing back Pietrangelo.
Certainly
when
not.
It's time.
No. A couple of things. Number one, when the Flyers signed Kevin Hayes to a 7-year contract for $50 million during the offseason, I thought, no way that the Blues will be able to keep Braden Schenn, because if Kevin Hayes is a $7.1 million a year player, Braden Schenn's a $9 to $10 million a year player. But obviously, like Schenn said, loves playing in the city, loves being part of this culture, and the 8-year term did make a difference for him. And the other thing, like he said, is we have a chance to win for a while. And that's one of the things that Doug Armstrong did sell to Schenn as he approached this contract.
I really felt it's our responsibility as an organization, and this is to Schenn and Tarasenko and O'Reilly and Pietrangelo and Parenko, and that list, is to support that group. They've done everything we've asked over the last 5 or 6 years to be a very competitive team. The last 8 years, we've been very competitive, and I know the term is something that we're going to have to deal with in all reality in you know, 5, 6, or probably closer to 6 or 7 years. With that being said, we'd rather put, you know, 12, 13, 14-year run together in a salary cap system and worry about that then, and we're going to need young players coming at that time. We're going to...
And you think about it, Ronj, from this perspective. After this season, Pietrangelo and Bouwmeester are unrestricted free agents. And obviously, Pietrangelo, especially at this stage of his career, is a big part of your core. After next year, Steen, Schwartz, and Bozak, along with Carl Gunnarsson. I would argue that, and by the way, both goalies after next year as well, so you're going to have to sign one of those. But I would argue that Jaden Schwartz is the key component in terms of the core of this team, along with Jordan Binnington. Then 3 years down the road, you've got Perron coming up, you've got Parayko coming up, and you've got Bortuzzo coming up. So there isn't a year where you have two or three of your big guys that are coming up for contracts and heading into unrestricted free agency.
Well, you have restricted free agents in Fabry and Dunn next year, too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of working around they'll have to do. But let's look at this in a bigger picture sense. If, and I know this is a huge if, but over the next couple of seasons, 2 to 3 seasons, you're talking about a team that, and again, you don't know what's going to happen when the playoffs roll around. But if they make serious playoff runs this year, or maybe not this year, but next, maybe it happens again next year, and if they follow that Blackhawks formula where they win another cup, and I know that's a huge, huge if, so you can't count on it happening. If they have a really successful playoff run here over the next 2 to 4 years, do you really care that much about what happens in years 6 and 7?
No, as long as the team's here.
Yeah, that's all I care about, too.
I'm with you.
Right.
Now, a year and a half ago, when John Tavares signed with his hometown Toronto Maple Leafs, a lot of Blues fans were wondering, what's wrong with St. Louis? Why doesn't anybody want to sign here? Lo and behold, now the Blues are in a situation where they've got a guy who might have left $4 or $5 million on the table to remain a member of the Blues.
That's what we're trying to build, and I think, obviously, having playoff success, it's an easier sell right now. But quite honestly, if you look at the Enterprise Center and Centene Center, these things are going to start help us selling ourselves. But no program sells itself if you're not winning. And that's what, talking to our ownership group led by Mr. Stillman and all of his partners, you know, we've had 8 good years, and there isn't a reason why we shouldn't have another, you know, 5 or 6 with this group if we can keep them together.
And it doesn't always work this way, Ronj, but what Armstrong tries to do when he's working with players and agents is try to explain what his long-range plan is.
And there's a sprinkling of signings that tell you some of the posts that you want to use. But for us to stay competitive, we need to work with the players. They need to understand what we're trying to accomplish as far as an AAV. And to do that, you give them the term that makes them comfortable. So it's really a partnership at this time with that grouping of players.
That's a unique way for a sports team to operate, to have what he calls a partnership and have the players understand, okay, this is what we're trying to do. This is why Braden Schenn, you're going to get $8 million in the first 2 years of this contract and then 5.25 or whatever it is in the third year of the contract. Here's my plan, and I want you to be a part of it.
Well, you're going to have some players that don't necessarily want to go along with that, even if they approve of your vision or they believe in it. They still are going to want to cash in as best they can when free agency mm-hmm. rolls around. And I'm not inside the head of Pat Maroon, but I have to figure that he's thinking, look, I just had a pretty successful year. I won a cup, came back home. I did it on a discounted deal. I'm not going to do that again because I don't know how many of these I'm going to get, how many more of these paydays I'm going to get. So he decided to try something else. I don't blame players when they do that, but if they feel like, I'm going to make a pretty good salary, I know this is hockey, I know teams have caps that they have to live by, this isn't like baseball where they can just give me whatever I want and they don't have to worry about dealing with the cap situation, so I'm going to make a considerable amount of money, I'm going to get a raise, and like Schenn is thinking right now, you're getting term and a ton of money. He's getting $52
million.
That's a lot of money over the next few years for a hockey player. And I think he probably understands that. And also, hey, I kind of want to win, and they can do that here. You can't make every player want that. It's a pretty good thing that he does, though.
You know, I think just having, you know, security, I think the main thing is just getting it off your mind. Go out and play, and that's really all there is. There's nothing more to it. I think excited to be a part of this organization for years to come.
And the most interesting thing for me is that the Blues have said previously that they want Robert Thomas to be a center. Well, you've got O'Reilly under contract long term. You've got Braden Schenn under contract long term. You still have Robert Thomas. You just signed Sundquist to a 4-year contract. Doug Armstrong, you've got pretty good competition there.
Yeah, we do. And I think it's Schenner played 20 games last year on left wing. We talked about that. He and his agent and I talked about his positioning. I said, I don't coach the team. But I also know as a manager, you don't make a commitment like this without seeing value in the player playing in your group of 6.
And that's the key. In the first 5 years of this contract, Braden Schenn is going to be a top 6 forward. And he's conscientious. He's responsible. He plays both ends of the ice. 2 years ago, he led the club in scoring. He's a really good guy to have for a hockey team. And like I said, Ronj, when we got the email this morning that the Blues signed him, I was pleasantly stunned.
Well, that's the thing. From what you hear from a lot of people when a deal like this kind of term happens, and it doesn't matter if it's hockey or if it's baseball or anything else, the criticisms you always hear inevitably are, well, what's he going to be in years 6 and 7? Who cares?
Don't worry about that.
Who cares? Because you're getting years probably 4 and 5 or through years 4 and 5 of a pretty productive player. That's what you're paying for. So who cares about what happens in the back end? And yeah, if you get to that point and he's just he's an albatross of a contract and he's not producing for you when he's 37 years old, you know what? You live with it because you paid for that first 4 to 5 years of it. That's what you're getting, and that is totally worth it when you're talking about 6 or 7 years down the road.
And to wrap this up, we'll reiterate that Doug Armstrong has never had to buy out a contract. He's as good as anybody at evaluating what a player is and what a player is going to be.
Still be movable at that point.
Yeah, if they need to do that.
If they have to.
It could be.
Yep.
Next up, Jack Flaherty is on the hill for the Cardinals, and Mike Schilt is going with a defensive lineup again. We'll dive deeper into that tonight, or that coming up next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Cardinals and Braves game two coming up. The pregame from ESPN Radio coming up in about 25 minutes here on 101 ESPN. After the game, there will be a brief ESPN Radio pregame, postgame, and then I will be with you for about an hour, and we'll be able to discuss, we'll break down the hopeful Cardinal victory as they take on the Braves in game two. Yes, Ranj?
If they do win today, it's over in three, right?
No. Soroka had the best road ERA in baseball, and he goes on Sunday.
Well, look at Adam Wainwright at home, man.
He's pretty good. But no, no guarantees that it's over in three. I thought the Cardinals had won the NLCS in 1996. I thought we were going to see the Yankees.
I did too.
32-1 in the last three games.
Yeah. My mom was actually at the game. I guess it would have been game five? No, game six. I thought it was
game six was in Atlanta. Game five was here.
Okay, so game five. She was at game five.
Yeah.
And I thought for sure she was going to be watching a team clinching to go to the World Series. I was away. I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to see it. And, you know, everybody knows what happened after that.
Yeah.
By the way, we were talking to Danny Mac about the Ronald Acuna Jr. situation and Brian Snitker after the game saying, basically, and I'm paraphrasing, that they were shorthanded, otherwise there would have been a move made, meaning they would have pulled him out of the game because of what he did. And we asked the question, have you ever seen it before? Somebody texted into the Hot Shots text line that, and maybe you'll remember this, that Whitey Herzog pulled Tom Brunansky out of a ball game for something like
Bruno?
That. That's what this texter said.
Certainly
so
not
that's
a playoff game,
because
Bruno never played a playoff game for the Cardinals.
During a playoff series because of lack of hustle in right field.
Yeah, Bruno never played in a playoff series for the Cardinals. He was acquired in April of 89 for Tom Herr, and he never played in a playoff game for the Cardinals.
Oh, okay. Well, we're just fact-checking here, and it's a good thing we've got you, because I don't recall that either.
Okay.
But at the same rate, Tom Brunansky is not Ronald Acuna.
Not exactly.
You know what I mean?
Hell of a guy.
Right.
Sweetheart, but yeah, not Ronald Acuna Jr.
Acuna is one of the best players in the game.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine that happening.
Maybe it's too easy for him. Never had to try. You know,
I know, but he's gotten pulled out of a game before this
crazy
season.
It's,
you would think you would have learned your lesson.
You would think so. The Cardinals have Flaherty against Foltynewicz. The Cardinal lineup has Fowler, Edmund, Goldie, Ozuna, Molina, Wong, DeYoung, Bader, and Flaherty, who, by the way, we talk all the time about his second half, which was epic. In September, in six games, he was 3-1 with an 0.82 ERA. In the month before that, in August, 4-1 with an 0.71 ERA, National League Pitcher of the Month for both of those months. And the Cardinals would seem to be in great shape for today's game. As great as Foltynewicz is, he's never approached what Jack Flaherty has since the All-Star break.
Well, here's all you can say about today. It doesn't set up much better for them. It really comes down to that. I mean, this is a game they're going to go into with their absolute best pitcher, somebody who has been, as you've already mentioned, and I don't even know if there's an argument against it. Second half, there's been nobody better in baseball.
Not even close.
Of baseball. So you could not ask for anything more going into game two, having already escaped Atlanta with a win in game one. And a lot of things did break the way of the Cardinals last night, who, by the way, played some shoddy defense.
They did.
Which is something they never do. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy that it happened in a playoff, but I guess that kind of stuff does occasionally.
And you had three guys essentially playing in their first playoff games. Wonger had never, he hadn't played much playoff baseball going into that one. Obviously, DeYoung and Edmund were playing in their first playoff games, and I would think that there were some jitters there. By the way, I don't blame Edmund at all. That was a hard-hit ball for him.
And they
took that error away.
Right.
But DeYoung's throw, Wong's
yes.
boot, yeah, that's stuff that is so atypical of the Cardinals, and that's all three runs that they scored against somebody not named Carlos Martinez.
And so hopefully that's the kind of thing that, all right, you've experienced it, and you've gotten away with it. Your team was able to come back and overcome your own mistakes, and you were able to capitalize on mistakes that the Braves made. So now moving forward, you should have those jitters out of the way. Okay, and now you know you've got the best pitcher in the game right now. The guy who's throwing the best right now, he's going for you in game two. You've already stolen one in Atlanta. So this just sets up absolutely perfectly for them. So whatever sort of nerves they have, you think that eliminates some of it, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, getting a game under your belt and then getting a win changes everything.
And by the way, Jack Flaherty, in 2 months, the last 2 months, has exactly one start that wasn't quality. And even that start was a good one. It was five innings and a run that he gave up. So you're talking about a serious run here. Mm-hmm. Where every time he goes out there, not only is he giving you a chance to win, but he is in some cases winning games for you.
Yep.
Which is, that's a remarkable run. You just hope that continues today.
On the flip side, Foltynewicz is 1-1 against the Cardinals this year with a 6.75 earned run average. Last year, he was great against the Cardinals. But in September, we noted how good he had been. 5 games, 4-1 with a earned run average of 1.50. So he's been a handful for the rest of baseball down the stretch. And hopefully, the Cardinals will be able to solve Mike Foltynewicz this afternoon. For his career, he's been much better against the Cardinals than he was this year. So I would think that the Cardinals will be relying on what they did against him this year rather than over the course of time. 7 career games for Foltynewicz against the Cardinals, and in those 7, 3-4, his earned run average 7.64.
Yeah, and I don't look, I don't think you can use past numbers, even though we're kind of using past numbers when we talk about Flaherty here, because 2 months ago was the past, right? And when you get to the playoffs, none of that really matters. You just know that he's on his game at the moment, and you have to hope that continues. You hope the success for the Cardinals against Foltynewicz will continue as well. That's really all this comes down to, and you have no idea how today is going to go. But I honestly could not feel better about their chances going in.
Are you happy with this lineup, or would you have rather seen Marp get an opportunity?
I'm okay with this. It's been working for them. Marp coming off the bench has been working for them. You're not losing it. If Tommy Edman had not been producing, and he still is, he's doing what he's doing. And this has been going on for several weeks now. There's not really much need to make a change here. And I'm sure Carpenter would prefer to be starting, but there has to be some level of comfort from him. For somebody who was struggling for as long as mm-hmm. he was, as bad as he looked at the plate, knowing there's some kind of success for him, even if it's just coming off the bench, that has to make him feel a whole lot better. So I have to believe he's in a good place. At this point, with Edmund still being productive, there's no reason to make a change.
14 career plate appearances for Wong against Foltynewicz, a 455 average and a 1.625 OPS. Bader has a 1.5 OPS against him. Marp's OPS against Foltynewicz in a grand total of, let me count them up here, 17 plate appearances, 1.054, and DeJong has a 1.064 against Foltynewicz. So the Cardinals have had some guys that have hit against him. Paul Goldschmidt has not hit well against Foltynewicz, only a 190 batting average and a 440 OPS against him.
What do you think of this? Is something I talked about with Stalter and Smallman during the show prior. I tend to think that home run that he hit last night, not just because they got a run and they got within one run of the lead, I think that may have, and maybe I'm projecting, I think that breathed a little bit of life into them last night. And I'm not in the dugout. I don't know. But I have to imagine they're down there thinking, okay, here we go.
That turned the tide, right. You get within one and you say, okay, our big guy's going. And then all of a sudden it was the big guys in the last two innings that did it. It was Carpenter. It was Ozuna. It was Fowler. It was Molina. It was Wonger, who's a young veteran. Yeah, it was the guys that you expect to come up big, especially your 3-4 hitters.
It ain't Pujols out there. But when you knew Albert Pujols was coming up to the plate, you felt like you had a chance. BT talks about that mm-hmm. all the time. They just kind of knew that he was going to be a factor. If you start to believe that Goldschmidt and Ozuna are going to be factors and you have that comfort, that can only help you psychologically. So Goldschmidt has to continue to be a big part of this, and so does Ozuna.
More of a preview of the Cards and Braves coming up next. We'll also hear from Brad Thompson, who's in Cabo, and he'll have a little bit of a preview for us next as we head down the stretch of this edition of the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. That's our partner, Brad Thompson. He's in Cabo, and that mic drop sounds pretty good from Cabo.
Well, it sounds good because he's had a few.
Well, that and the quality is great.
Oh, yeah. I'm not too worried about the quality, Randy. I'm worried about the quality of the time he's having right now.
He's having a great time.
And the quality of the Sunblock 5000 he's using.
That is not high quality.
You don't think so?
Well, he'll come back all freckly.
Oh, well, there's no avoiding the freckles, but he's got to be using some kind of sunscreen.
I think so. Flaherty going against Foltynewicz today. We want to bring you up to date on our programming here because after today's game, which comes your way in about 40 minutes, a pregame from ESPN in about 10 minutes, after that, I will have a postgame show here on 101 ESPN. For about an hour after the ESPN postgame show. So if you're driving around, we'd love to have you mic drop that or send a text in, and we can break it down together here on 101 ESPN. And then, Ronj, on Sunday,
that's right,
you'll have the postgame show.
That is correct. We might be talking about a team advancing to the NLCS. Hopefully, if everything goes well today and on Sunday, we're going to be talking about a team that's one of the last four.
All right, let's get to a couple of points here. The Cardinals used Carlos Martinez for 29 pitches last night, but Jeff Jones tweeting that Schilt says Carlos is good to go today. Quote, he gave me a hug after the game last night and said, I'm ready to go tomorrow, Poppy. So he is ready. Carlos Martinez is. On the other side, Chris Martin will not be available for the rest of the series for Atlanta after suffering his injury last night. So they'll either go with Sean Newcomb. He'll be probably their most prominent lefty out of the pen. But Max Fried was dominant in the seventh last night. We'll probably see more of Fried, I would think, in the rest of the series out of the bullpen.
It's nice to see the Cardinals, some breaks go in their favor. And that Chris Martin situation, I know they highlighted it during the game last night, but that may have directly led to Paul Goldschmidt's home run because they brought in Martin to face him. He warms up. He didn't even get to throw a single pitch in the inning, and they have to pull him out and bring in Melanson, who was not good. Did it not look to you like the Cardinals were just waiting on that curveball?
Yep.
They were pounding that thing last night.
And it's interesting because when he was with Pittsburgh and was throwing that curveball, he handled the Cardinals pretty well.
Right.
He's a different pitcher since he got to the Giants and now Atlanta, and he does seem more predictable, and he's a two-pitch guy. He hasn't really expanded his repertoire.
I wonder what the game plan must be. Just wait for the curveball and go after it. And Cardinals were able to identify it. They waited on it, and they did exactly that. Five hits and four runs. He had a really lousy inning.
I thought that the key yesterday would be how the starters performed. I thought both starters would struggle, and obviously both were great. I think today, the same thing. I think that the key for the Cardinals is going to be getting six or seven quality innings out of Jack Flaherty, and I think that for the Braves, they need to get five or six out of Folty. And the bullpens, I believe yesterday was the aberration. Certainly for Carlos Martinez, allowing three in the ninth, that was an aberration. As a matter of fact, I would argue that all six runs the Cardinals allowed yesterday were uncharacteristic of them. Three on defense, three by Martinez. On the other side, does it surprise anybody that Paul Goldschmidt's hitting home runs and that Marcell Ozuna's hitting two-run doubles? I don't think so.
The last couple of seasons, you couldn't, at least for me, I wasn't able to, if you had asked me, hey, think back to a game in which the Cardinals lost because of bad defense. If you go back last year and the year before that, I would have told you that I couldn't tell you because it happened so often. I wasn't really sure. This season, I couldn't tell you because it never happens. It's the exact opposite. So it's so odd to see it occur in a postseason. But if we know anything about postseason baseball, if we've learned anything about it over the years, it's that the unpredictable will happen. So for them to have a game like they had yesterday where they were having some difficulty fielding and throwing and all that sort of thing, I don't want to say I'm totally surprised, but I'm in, I'm a little bit, because this team was so good and so clean at that aspect of the game all year.
I really do believe that that was first playoff game jitters. And I would think that getting that first game, and especially a win under their belt, these guys will be a lot better. That's not who they are yesterday.
Right.
They'll be more like themselves in this game.
Yeah, I would think so,
and for the rest of the series.
Yeah, so that particular part of their game, I am not worried about. They should be much, much better today.
About a minute to go here. My thought about the series has changed. I think the Cardinals will win now. I said before things started, I thought the key for the Cardinals was going to get a win, getting a win from somebody that wasn't named Jack Flaherty. They did yesterday, and now you have Flaherty for two of the four games if necessary, and I think the Cardinals will win today, and I think they'll win the series.
I believe that as well. I was right there with you yesterday. I said that I thought the Braves probably win. I was hoping for a Cardinals series win, but I think now, having taken that game and going all the way back to the first inning of the game yesterday, the fact it did not get out of hand for the Cardinals, that Acuna was thrown out trying to steal second base, and that inning could have been really bad, and Miles Michaelis almost got pulled from that. The fact that didn't happen, and the bullpen still in good shape, I think they're in really good position.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you after the game. Brad Barnes, our producer, Mike Ryder, our board op, and I will see you after the Cardinals and Braves coming up on 101 ESPN.